Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, and I'll be your inner voice as I break down all the shows we watched together this week. No shame, no regret, just wanting all the reality we can get. Remember to check the show notes for how to find me and the rest of our chosen people. Facebook and Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, and Twitter at Reality TV Pod. And for bonus episodes, head on over to patreon.com/welcometorealityTV. And now, on with the show. Hey there. Today we have some Teen Mom OG and the premiere of Bravo's new show, Stripped, that premiered just last night. All of these new shows coming up, it's pretty exciting. There's a lot of potential, and probably going with that, a lot of potential for failures. Like MTV's Floribama Shore. I am officially announcing that I cannot get on board with that show. I sincerely gave it my best effort. I sat down to watch the second episode and I didn't even make it to the first commercial break. I know a lot of you are saying, fast forward, watch the last part, but I watched the last 5 or 10 minutes, that last segment, and I know there was a huge fight going on. I can't buy into it. There's too much bad that outweighs the good for me. As Luis would say, I'm so sorry. Oh my God. All right. Well, let's get into Teen Mom. Thanks, MTV, for splitting up the two episodes. Such a bummer. Please tell me that's not the plan for the rest of the season, because that's going to really piss me off. Most of us are not actual teens watching this show, and therefore staying up past 10 p.m. to watch some Teen Moms is asking a lot. Well, let's chat about Caitlin. Well, finally we get to see it on camera. All these months of seeing Tierra Rain, the children's clothing line no one asked for, it's going to be launched next month. I don't recall ever watching, hearing, reading anyone comment on Kate and Tyler's fashion sense or look to them as the elite fashion house of Detroit. The only thing close was when I thought Tyler was trying to emulate Hilary Swank in Boys Don't Cry, or flashback to the 80s, that girl in the movie Just One of the Guys, which that's a movie that'll never be remade. Well, they're comparing their styles to one another and saying how opposite their designs are for the boys and girls clothing line. Tyler says his is, quote, so urban. Because apparently it's got some black on it and black pleather sleeves. That's not a joke. And Kate's style is so hippie. If I were to describe Kate's style, hippie would be next to last. Last place would be recently laundered. Well, they're bringing any child who is allowed to be around Butch or April to this photo shoot of theirs. And there's just about everything and anything that could distract a child. They're running through fountains while Kate is screaming for the photographer and Tyler to hurry up and come take the pictures. And come to think of it, seeing the kids in motion as just a really large blur would probably result in better sales, because those clothes are fucking terrible. One of the outfits, or actually I think there's two, there's fringe on it. Yeah, that'll be real fun to untangle, unknot, and try to tame if the kid doesn't pull all the little fringes off before the first washing. And let's be honest, those things are just cheap China rags, and they'll be lucky to even make it through one cycle in the washer dryer. Well, they are throwing themselves a barbecue to celebrate this first photo shoot of theirs. And maybe they're onto something, because surviving family photo shoots is enough to make any mother want to throw themselves a super Sweet 16 style party. We find out during this barbecue that not only does Kate like to eat actual food in addition to her cuticles, but she wants to get pregnant soon. Cue a nationwide eye roll. Why is this such a big deal? Why are we making this a storyline? You're married now, you have a kid, you've given birth twice. This is no different than any conversation with any other moms you'd find on a playground or meeting up with your friends for dinner. So fast forward to these crazy kids at the Octagon house that they bought, and Tyler pretty much just wants to build an attached barn to the house. So now he's got the choice of whether he wants to smell horse shit in the morning or Caitlin's zebra pink sweatshirt whenever he wants. But the barn specialist, I don't know what you call him, architect, barn architect, says that Tyler's crazy. And then Kate, out of nowhere, just barrels her way out of the house screaming, "This is my special thing." "Oh, you mean your horse Callie, the goat, the bad acrylic nails, and her hyper color changing hair that's different in every scene? Is it enough? You don't have enough special things, Kate?" Well, a little later in the car, Tyler shares that he really wants another baby, and he really, really wants to be surprised about it. I really wanted to yank that nasty coat of Caitlin's off of Nova, because that thing is basically just another layer of Caitlin's molted off skin at this point. Well, Tyler wants Kate to do whatever it is that she needs to do to be fertile, but whatever she does, do not tell him that she might be pregnant or that she's trying to get pregnant or not trying. He just wants to be totally surprised, but maybe in a Batman box, and maybe have it have a pregnancy test in it, but don't tell him, don't do that. Okay, Mariah Carey, slow your roll. So a few days later, Kate and Tyler are scratching their asses on the couch while their clothing line is selling out and never. So the producers give them, I'm sure, a not so subtle cue to start talking about babies or something, please. So Caitlin starts talking about getting a pap smear, and after a failed attempt to do an unpaid infomercial for getting her yearly checkups, hashtag it's your health, Kate just says that in order for them to follow through on getting pregnant, she's got to get her IUD out. She's afraid of experiencing postpartum depression, however, like she did with Nova. Well, there you have it. The focus of their speaking tours for the next year. Because now they can't keep talking about Carly because it looks like they burned that bridge. So postpartum depression it is. Well, speaking or not speaking of Carly, while camping with their friend Kayla, who I thought was super cute, by the way, Kate says that they haven't seen Carly in 2 years and now she's 8 years old, which it does kind of blow my mind. I can't believe that. It is what it is with that situation, but more importantly, seeing Kayla's little boys is giving Caitlin the baby bug. And then there's more talk about postpartum depression, which is a legit thing. And if you have it or you have experienced it, here's my little soapbox. No, you're not alone. There's tons of people and places to get helped. I just rip on Caitlin a lot, but every once in a while, she does actually say some pretty profound things. And in regards to the postpartum depression, she said that she can't let that fear of it hold her back from something that she knows in the long run is going to bring her so much joy. And she just knows that she's got to be well prepared for it this time and know that it gets better because it's worth it. Well, after they get home, producer Kirthy, who always has this very overly concerned on her look on her face at all time, like she's what I picture like a typical school social worker. Well, she's given a tour of Tierra Rain World Headquarters. It's pretty coincidental how it worked out because Kate and Ty ended up having a space to store, pack, and ship this highly in-demand product line, this international house of couture. and it happens to be right in the junk room, filled with April's old furniture and layers of dust and pet hair. And there's probably some areas where Nova left piles of her poo. Right on the floor, on the filthy carpet, Caitlin gets down. There's visible crap all over it. And she shows us that this is where they're going to fold and roll the items into tissue paper, which Kate seems to think is like a complex origami project. And then they're going to include a signed wedding photo and a note when they ship out their products, because Kate says they say presentation is key. There's nothing I can really even say to that. Well, with this booming manufacturing facility right on premise, Kate explains to Kirthy why she's going to hold off on having a baby now. It's just too much going on with the business, in quotes, and renovating the house. And she's got 10 fingers to nibble down to the nub every day. I mean, a person can only handle so much, right? Well, Kate actually seems pretty even keeled about this whole business thing, but it's Tyler who needs to take a Xanax, calm down. They're already having a company sew their labels in for them. They are already getting the clothes in from bulk from China. So really, Tyler, what's the big deal? Kate tells him that she thinks it's going to be a good idea to put that little Batman dream box on hold, and he agrees. And then as he goes to leave the house, Caitlin is on her second helping of her thumb, and she yells, "Hey, kiss me." And Tyler's like, "No, I'm all good." So then she yells at him again, and I can see right then when he goes to kiss her, she's got a skin remnant between her teeth as she's kissing him. And I am not playing with you. I want you to go back and see it because I want you to know I'm not exaggerating, but I don't want you to because you may not eat for the next week. All right. Well, on the other hand, I was elated to see a scene at Tyler's mom, Kim's house. I fucking adore Kim. And Christmas came early because not only do we get to see Kim, but we got to see her still in her post office uniform. I've always said that if Kim were to have been born in, let's say, New York, Boston, Chicago, almost anywhere, I bet you she'd be that powerhouse businesswoman, a real entrepreneur, like a really nice version of Ramona Singer, minus all the Ramona stuff. Can you see it? Well, the great mom that Kim is, she's concerned that Tyler's overdoing it by working 3 hours a week with everything outsourced, like the sewing, and now they decide they're going to outsource the packing and outsourcing the website. I mean, all this with a whopping total of 6 outfits. So we're talking 12 SKUs, and Tyler is losing sleep. He can't sleep over it. And what are they going to do when the MTV checks stop coming in and they have to get real jobs? And more importantly, what are they going to do when they're stuck with all this inventory of fringy, ugly kids' clothes? All right, well, let's talk about Farrah. Well, if Karma isn't already starting to call Farrah's name, she's renting out her Austin house because she didn't get any offers, wasn't able to sell it. So she's moved in with Michael and his girlfriend, and she's brought Starburst the pony with her. And that's not the worst of it, because she brought Sophia too. This place looks like a hoarder house, and I'm not exaggerating. If you saw it, you can attest to it. All of Farrah's, "I'm an entrepreneur, successful businesswoman." Well, she's got every item of hers in black garbage bags from floor to ceiling in Michael's old, dingy, screened-in porch. Michael says he has OCD and it's starting to kick in, But the rest of the house looks pretty busy and filled with knickknacks, and as did that house in Iowa of theirs with Deborah. So I don't know what form of OCD he's suffering from. Well, Farrah's ultimate goal is to move to LA with Sophia before the school year begins. But since she sold her townhouse that she had there, she's got to find and purchase a new home in a very tight time frame. So she's going to go spend a week in LA to find a house. If that were me, I would have made it 2 weeks if that meant escaping Michael and Sophia. Well, once in LA, we meet Maserati Megan, Farrah's psychotic single white female real estate agent. She's even thirstier than Mauricio in his agency hats. So she's like Rain Man when she's with Farrah. She just keeps repeating over and over, just telling you, you have to live in Beverly Hills. You're living in Beverly Hills. You want to live in Beverly Hills. No, bitch, you want a Beverly Hills commission check. So they pull up to a house and Farrah loves it. But Maserati Meg cock blocks the house within 2.2 seconds. This is not your style. I'm not letting you live here. Nope, nope, not your style. Well, for the first time since she farted as a baby, Farrah smiles and keeps saying she loves the house as she tours it. And then after Meg was able to peel her upper lip off Farrah's ass implant, she says, yeah, I like this. However, knowing Farrah's got a larger budget and her potential commission, in addition to having a little NTV credit on her LinkedIn now, Meg insists Farrah not live there when they get back in the car, and that she's trying to do like this subliminal message thing where if she just keeps saying the same thing enough over and over, Farrah will start to think it in her own head and say it and believe it. I am sure she learned it at last year's 2016 real estate convention or some shit. So with Farrah feeling the crunch of time, she asks if Meg doesn't mind showing her another house. And then it's made clear that there's a real drought in LA because Maserati Meg is thirsty. And she says, no, I don't mind. I told you, I'm going to be your best friend. And then they had that weird conversation. And she's like, if something happens to you, I will take care of your daughter. I will. That whole scene in the car was strange. It was like two personality disorders coexisting, but on two totally different orbits. Well, still stressed without finding a house, Farrah flies back and we see a freaking zoo at Michael's house. They have seven dogs, four people, a horse, and 1.5 bathrooms. And all the dogs were in cages with sheets over them. And Farrah was threatening them with spray bottles because they were barking. And I know nothing about dogs, but I do know that that's not what dogs like. Well, back in Council Bluffs, Iowa, producers check in with Deb's OG. She's making the bed because David doesn't like it when it's messy. I don't want to know anything about David's sleep preferences, how, where, when he likes it. I can't process it all. Well, Deborah sits down on some Marie Antoinette meets Little House on the Prairie settee at the end of her bed and explains that it could have been great for Farrah to come here. She could have lived across the street in the house that Deborah owns. She would have had it all to herself. And that she misses intimate moments with Farrah with chocolate or whatever. Yes, try to run that one over in your head. Intimate moments with chocolate or whatever. Eesh. And that the hardest part for Deborah is that she's trying to tell Farrah that she loves her, that she laid down her life for her, but Farrah isn't able to receive it. Well, at least we know that she got one line out of that family boot camp therapy thing. She can't receive the message. There's just too much there to unpack with Farrah and Deb. They are hot or cold. None of it makes sense. Two people with just a slew of personality disorders and mental illness. And this is just in my non-Dr. David opinion. We had an incredibly lame segment with Farah trying to find a package of spoons. You think that had anything to do with her refusing to film on other days? So this was just totally a time filler. I just have a hunch. Well, things have been crazy with Spoongate and porn conventions, so Farah's going to go visit her friend Heather. Michael's girlfriend was instructed to make it sound like Farah's a stay-at-home mom who homeschools and bakes cookies, so she's asking her with probably a knife to her throat, "When was the last time you had a girls' weekend? You never go out and party, Farah." Really? Because just last week's episode, you were all the fucking club together. Shut your lying face. Her trip was so stupid, it wasn't even worth talking about. We did get to see Deborah in a wig store. She's looking for some extensions or a fall so she can look like this inspiration picture she brought. You guys, that picture. The long, tapered, because the dress is open in the back. The tapered hair that was all curled, very Duggar, very early to mid-90s, just bad, bad, bad. And then she kept giving the lady at the wig store details about her 100-inch train. And the lady was like, yeah, great. I don't give a shit. Go sit in there. So Deborah also brought her friend Matt, who's going to do her hair. His job is to make her think she looks good and just nod and tell her that Farah's a terrible person. And this is when we find out that Deborah is having 100 guests at the wedding and 28 fans are invited. This is old news to all of us now because all that stuff came out a month or so ago, but it was actually kind of funny to hear her say that, her 28 fans. Well, they decided to have the wedding and the reception at the aquarium because it's not stuffy or old. You can have fun, look at penguins. Yeah, or smell their shit, which is one of the worst smelling shits of any animal. And really, this is Deb's dream because David said I could have whatever I want. You only marry your dream man once. God, what I would give to read over pubescent Deborah's diaries about her dream man being an infectious disease doctor who treats her kids like shit, who has an explosive temper and no empathy, likes to be antisocial in public. So dreamy. Well, we know that Deb asked Farah to be the maid of honor and Sophia to be a dress attendant, which was the first time I had heard that one. Attend to my dress? No, I'd rather the little ones just go off and get Skittles high than be hanging around on my train all night. But Farah and Sophia declined because they don't like David. In the end, we see Farah kissing Sophia, and then Sophia's evil plot starts coming all together, and we see her smiling through the window at Farah while Farah is combing Sophia's precious little horse. Whew, chills. All right, let's go see what's going on with little Ambi Amber. We left off with Amber telling Matt that the wedding and engagement were off. Thank God. Matt storms off and is screaming, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm being punished again. What did I do? I've done nothing in 3 years. Well, you can say that again. What's she going to do when someday someone says something mean to her online? I'm just telling you, this is going to end badly. Is it even worth talking about how disgusting Matt is and how obvious it is that he is a creep and an opportunist? All of us except Amber saw this years ago. So Matt peels off in the Corvette like a high schooler trying to get attention at the end of the day in the parking lot. And now Amber's brother Bubba comes over. He actually seems pretty normal to me, or at least normal compared to the heaps of garbage that create his family. Amber tells him that Gary told Leah about she and Matt having some issues right now, but Bubba doesn't really give a shit about Gary. He's just making sure that Amber doesn't take Matt back. So he's kind of just checking in, where are you at mentally and emotionally with all this? Thankful, Amber is thinking clearly and says, Matt is a pathological liar. But now, even knowing that, Amber has to deal with the fallout of Boo Boo loving Matt. She has got to stop with the Boo Boo. Kids have nicknames, I get it. But I don't have everyone else call my kid their nickname. It's just really weird. It's like adults who still call their parents mommy and daddy. Well, the next day, they're all going to meet up with Gare Bear and the rest of the crew. Amber oversleeps as usual, so they have to throw shit at her window to wake her up. So typical. I miss those days when you could just sleep in whenever you wanted. She doesn't know how good she has it, but those days are numbered because, as we know, she's pregnant in real time, so enjoy the last of those little naps, Amber. Well, they get to a lake meeting up with Gary, and Amber calls Leah, "Hey, booger butt," which, again, it annoyed me. Because I'm me, it annoys me, and because it's Amber, and Amber is Amber. And then we get to see Gary wedged so hard into that captain's chair on the boat that he just became one with the chair. He just melded right in like a lazy boy adrift on the most depressing, lackluster lake I've ever seen. Christina's working on turning herself into a neon shade of red while Amber tells Leah, "I need a tan, boo-boo. I'm real pale." I should have known she'd say pell instead of pale because she used to say gel instead of jail. I was lost in the confusion of seeing the Putmans from TLC's Meet the Putmans house in the background. And fortunately, Christina and her third-degree burn snapped to when she asked where Matt was. And Amber kind of left it vague, more just kind of like a, oh, he's doing his thing, I'm just going to do me. Well, then we get to my favorite part, which I am 100% sure was Gary's favorite part too. The dinner. Gary is literally double fisting food into his mouth. I'm serious. One hand with a fork piled with food, and in his other hand was a large piece of bread, and he was going at it. At one point, a small piece of food fell from the fork, and his reaction time to retrieve it was like that of someone in special ops, okay? He was on a mission to retrieve and serve himself another helping. They had a good dinner. Everyone got along. Everyone's happy that Amber's being strong, and even Gary gives her a hug, which is a pretty bold move at the top of the stairs. Ring a bell? Brave man. Well, fast forward, they're back home, and we find out that Amber has been crunching some numbers, and it turns out $120,000 is missing, and she has no idea where it is, can't account of it. Well, gee, the Corvette in your driveway and maybe the guy who's been buying you diamond rings and shit for the last 3 years with no job. Come on, Amber. All this time, Matt has been off visiting his daughter and he's coming back today. And Amber was pissed off about that because she was helping his daughter out. She thought that they were all good. And then she finds out that his daughter has been talking shit about her, making Amber out to be the bad guy. So Matt screeches up in the Corvette Amber doesn't know she paid for, and she notices Matt lost weight. She confronts him on why he's not setting the record straight for his daughter, that he's making her out to be the bad guy, and that Matt is getting backlash because of shit that he has done, his actions. Matt decided to be on MTV. Matt wanted it. So now Matt can deal with the consequence. Amber didn't make him do it. She didn't force him, you know, hog tie him into this. So Matt can't answer. He runs away like a coward. And Amber says, "I don't like pussies. I like men." Your prison girlfriend, who we met 2 seasons ago, would beg to differ. So they chase Matt upstairs, and he's doing his best to turn this all around on Amber. "She shouldn't be bringing my daughter into this." Well, again, you're the one who brought her on the show, so fair game. Well, Amber hears something going on, so she goes upstairs. I gotta say, that dress on Amber was super flattering. She looks great in that. Buy some more in different colors, honey. So basically, she goes up there, yells at him to get out of her house. He leaves again, peels off in her car, and I think that's the end of Matt. Fingers and toes crossed. All right, Macy, here we go. Wow, was that a lot or what? Macy's still in the dark about Ryan, so she has no clue what's going on. And now I need to go on the record. I'm changing my stance on this. Last week, I said that it was none of Macy's business, but you know what? The more I thought about it, remember when Mackenzie read that letter to her and said, Macy knew Ryan had a drug problem for whatever, XYZ days and hours and minutes, and Macy didn't say anything, and she should have said something, she should have done something. Well, you know what, Mackenzie, wish granted. You wanted her to be proactive and speak up, so now she's doing it. So now you got to deal with it. She's in your business. Mackenzie's excited because guess what? We find out Ryan is getting to go home and leave rehab today. So she picks him up. He's clean and sober, and it's going to be a new life and new beginnings. And he did look and sound great. Well, now Mackenzie has clearly memorized all her lines that Jen and Larry rehearse with her. So she's talking with Ryan. And she says, Ryan, how long were you there?
21 days.
And you didn't leave early. You graduated early, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have to take any classes, right? I mean, it was like straight out of Nickelodeon Children's Acting 101. And then she asks him if there's an aftercare plan, and he says that they leave it up to you. I'm going to try and talk to my therapist once a week. Fucking hell. He was using 3 times a day, spending $10,000 a week, and you assholes are trying to spin this like he was in the advanced class for addicts. We're not idiots. Now, in the car was crazy. Total bullshit when they're having this conversation. When Mackenzie says, it's just crazy that I didn't know. And then Ryan says, you didn't have a clue. Every morning I had to tell you I was going somewhere, and 99% of the time it wasn't the truth. So number one, he told you he was lying to you every single day you were together, and you're just like, oh, okay. And number two, he was leaving every day in the morning and then 2 more times that day looking like he did. We all saw it, and you didn't know. We're not all Jen and Larry pulling the wool over our own eyes. Well, now we jump over to Macy's house, and she's telling Taylor that she's been getting these texts from Ryan, but she didn't even know that he was home from rehab yet because it's awfully soon. It's only been 21 days. She thinks, like us, it's BS that he graduated. He didn't graduate. 21 days is just the minimum stay. And I gotta say, Ryan's texts were pretty aggressive. Now jump back to Jen and Larry's. Mackenzie and Ryan sit down with Jen in their little living room, and Ryan says he's not really feeling that great, but it's good to be home, that Macy isn't texting him back, so he's just going to go over there and he's just going to show up, and that he feels bad for Bentley living over there because he has to help take care of his siblings and do chores, and he's just a kid. He needs to play all day. Yeah, the result of that is Ryan, right? No, I don't think responsibility for a kid is a bad thing. Now, I don't know if Jen is saying this on camera because she knows she needs to play nice with Macy if she ever wants to see Bentley again, or if she really is trying to talk sense into Ryan. But she tells him that everybody's supporting you, Ryan, including Macy. Maybe she just wants to see that you're doing okay right now. But now Ryan is pissed because he feels like people are taking her side. And I'm just going to say it. I think he's high in this scene, allegedly. And he starts yelling, well, she can see when she comes over here to drop him off. And he calls her voicemail, and his message is, Macy, this is Ryan. You need to pick up the phone when I call you. And now Jen and Mackenzie keep making eyes at one another because, again, I think they are realizing that he's high again one fucking day later. And so then Ryan says, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but if I don't get him, I'm going to hurt somebody. Head of the class there, graduated early. So now it's Father's Day, and Taylor and Macy are talking about Macy bringing Bentley to see Ryan. They don't think Ryan deserves to see him because he doesn't act like a father, but Macy will bring him over there because Bentley asked to see him. She just doesn't want it on camera. I think that's perfectly fair. Meanwhile, Ryan and Mackenzie are sitting around with Jen and Larry again, and this time Ryan is pile driving chicken and pork into his mouth like he hasn't eaten in years. It was disgusting to watch him eat like that. A toddler with no utensils eating with their hands has more grace than him. Ryan's also drinking a beer, which I found questionable. I don't know a great deal about addiction and pills versus alcohol or mixing with it, but it just didn't look right, but I don't know. Jen tells them that Macy is going to bring Bentley over, but they got to turn off the cameras, and that just, like a switch, pisses Ryan off. He thinks that Macy wants everything on TV, so why is this not allowed? And Mackenzie pipes in saying, I think that's so rude. You know what's so rude, Mackenzie? Is your son that you don't see on film? So it wouldn't be rude if we just went to your kid's school and filmed him, right, Mackenzie? You're on the show now, so go get your kid in and put him on. I can't stand her. She is such, she's just slimy. Well, Ryan's on a roll and asks Jen, Mama, how many times have you done nice things for her and how has she repaid you? Hey, Ryan, look in the mirror. What have you done to repay your parents? What have you done to repay Macy for raising your son to be a pretty damn good kid? So Macy ends up bringing Bentley over, but we don't get to see it. But we do see the aftermath because it didn't go well. Macy said that Bentley showed up, gave Ryan his present, and then Ryan quickly shooed him off to go play basketball instead of interacting with him. So then Macy asks Ryan, how are you? And he brushes her off because he's an asshole. And then she asked, no, really, like, how are you? Putting our child aside, are you okay? And then Ryan snapped back with a, I'm okay, but I don't like your husband. Well, I gotta say, if I were Macy, the gloves would be off at that point for me too. So she responds with, I have a problem with your snake of a wife. That a girl, Macy. I probably would have had a lot more nasty things to say than that. Well, then Taylor says that Larry doesn't like him now. Remember, he used to really like Taylor because Taylor got upset with Larry at Bentley's baseball games because apparently Larry gets up on the fence and he starts yelling aggressively at Bentley, you know, run and all that kind of shit. I'm sure we all either had those parents or know those parents that get way too into the game. And I can see that in Larry. We saw it tonight. And that's not okay. Don't be yelling at your kid. That's scary. It's demoralizing. And it's just embarrassing. So Ryan threatens Macy with, you know, a typical teen mom, teen dad thing. Okay, see you in court. Macy isn't totally worried because, I mean, just look at Ryan. But it's true what she said. Her downfall will be that she is already too nice. She's already set the precedence with their current schedule, so a judge is going to take that into account. Well, now we come to one of the weirdest scenes in Teen Mom history. Back to Larry, he says to Ryan and Mackenzie, Macy seems jealous and still in love with you. Ha. No, she's married and has two other kids. I'm pretty sure she isn't pining over your loser of a son. And then Mackenzie pipes in and says, she said on camera she cries every night in bed to Taylor about Ryan. Yeah, she's not crying that she wants to bone him, you idiot. She's frustrated with him because he's a dickhead and he's a bad father and role model for her son. God, you fucking chinless moron. Well, Ryan is delusional and says that he wants to go to mediation, and if it doesn't go 100% his way, they'll just go to court. Okay, sure, Jan. And then Mackenzie says, I don't trust a hair on that red-haired head. Well, I don't trust your new orthodontist because I don't think he's addressing that whole chin situation. Well, Larry is pissed. Like, so pissed, it makes me realize why Jen is so quiet and tortured in that house with these two hotheads of hers. And he yells, one day you're going to know the damn truth, and so will Bentley. And then he whispers to himself, I'm sorry, Lord. And then all of a sudden, they pan over to Ryan, and he's crying. And I think Larry's crying too, and Ryan keeps crying, and Mackenzie's tapping his arm, saying, what, you okay? What? Just crying, choking back tears. So what is the truth that Larry is talking about? Or was Ryan crying because, yeah, Bentley will know the truth because we've got it all on tape. What is your conspiracy or legitimate theory on this truth? You've got to tell me. Last night, Bravo debuted their new series, Stripped. The premise is that a couple or friends or whoever's living in a house has to completely empty their house of all of their possessions, meaning everything, down to their clothes, toothpaste, the whole deal. So they box everything up, move it to a storage container, and then they're left naked in a completely empty house, no furniture, no towels, nothing. And the only things that they are allowed to have are food rations, water, toilet paper, and they can use the sink. And they still have to carry on their everyday lives, including their jobs, and they can leave their pets as is. They got their pet food, so there's no animals harmed in the filming. Now, over the course of 21 days, they're then allowed to choose one item per day to retrieve from the storage container. The point being, you know, what does anyone really need to survive and can they do it? I was freaking psyched for this show. The previews looked funny and I love a good freak out and I love when someone embarrasses themselves. So this was right up my alley. So we're introduced to Justin and Ali, which they kept saying Ali, not Ali. Anyone notice that? So forgive me if I'm saying her name wrong. I'm just going to call her Allie. Justin is 33 and an accountant. Allie is a stylist in LA. He's the pragmatic guy who doesn't care about shopping or clothes, and she's the materialistic girly girl wife who loves fashion and makeup. Well, their goal is to see if they can learn to live with less and become less dependent on having all these things because they want to start a family soon. And this is where my gut started telling me that the show was heading in the wrong direction. Because no one gives a shit about her ovulation cycle or your family planning. We just want to laugh at you. So Justin thinks that they need to eliminate all the stuff they have, but Allie enjoys having her collectibles and going shopping. Once the house is cleared out, they ask the homeowners how many items they think they have in their house. And Justin says, 1,700. And in actuality, they had 10,000 items. I don't think 10,000 sounds that bad, to be honest. I'm trying to think. By the time you factor in utensils, your food and spices, little stuff like your dental floss or tools and paper, your clothes, all that, it's going to add up pretty quickly. Justin's not too concerned. He thinks he's going to do fine in these 21 days, but he's worried about Allie because she's admittedly addicted to her phone. And she's one of those people who has the click sound on her phone enabled. So you are constantly hearing that tick, 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 tick. That would send me into a seizure turned homicidal rage. So there's a lot of details left in at the beginning where you can tell that it was supposed to materialize into a storyline, but they just didn't get it there. Like that dumb cricket, it's not even worth explaining if you didn't watch it. So let's get to the good stuff. They're standing in their empty house, and now it's time to strip down. Justin is a huskier guy, but he just strips it all off down to his hairy ass crack, and it's pretty obvious he didn't manscape. And Allie takes off all her clothes, and she's wearing a matching bra and underwear. Kudos to her for that, because I can count the times on one hand I've been able to actually pull that off. But she leaves on her Ferragamo boots on until the very end. Wouldn't that be the first thing you remove? Or have I just been undressing myself incorrectly for all these years? To me, that's like taking your bra off first and then taking your shirt off. So now they're standing there totally nude in front of these cameras in the middle of their family room. And their first instinct is to hug and hold on to each other in order to hide their own privacies, as my daughter would say. So neither of them are comfortable. And there's a lot of moments where they catch Justin bending down. I mean, I thought it was bad for us, but no one was suffering more than that camera crew. Well, fast forward and it's time to go to sleep. So they have to just lay down on a wood floor, and you see time-lapse footage of them spooning. And at one point, she's laying on top of him, like he's face down on the floor and she's face down on him. That would absolutely suck. And I would be freezing, because even when it's hot out, I need a top sheet or something to cover me, or else, duh, the boogeyman's going to grab my feet from under the bed. And that sheet or blanket is also the thing that protects me from potential robbers and rapists. It's just a proven fact. So by the next morning, we find out that Justin has just totally adapted to this new life. He's standing at the window watching the sunrise. He's picking oranges in the backyard. And Allie's in the bedroom, crouched against the wall like the scene from The Crying Game. She's feeling raw, insecure, depressed. So now, since it's officially day one, they can go to the storage unit to pick an item to retrieve. But they have to get to it first. So Justin comes up with a pretty ingenious plan, and he fashions some Hawaiian-inspired frocks made from the branches in their backyard. And as they make their way down the street to the storage unit, they kind of grab random boxes and signs to use as additional shields as they're walking. And there's people honking and screaming out to them, which is an actual nightmare I've had, so I can't imagine. So day one, they get there and Allie chooses a dress to wear, good choice, and Justin chooses his massive 27-piece sectional couch. Because technically the couch counts as one item, but they have to figure out how they're going to get that couch back to their house because they don't have a car or anything. So they take some cushions with them, which they use to cover themselves on the way back. And then Allie asks a neighbor to help them transport the rest of those things. So a little, I don't know, dancing around the rules, but they made it happen. I questioned this choice of the couch at first, but it does make sense because you can sit on it, sleep on it, use the pillows to cover yourself. You might as well be comfortable. Well, since they have no shower, no soap, no towels, Justin decides to shower or bathe in their swimming pool. And then he uses, brace yourself, his couch cushions, which looks like a microfiber, to dry himself off. This was the most disgusting thing I'd seen. I mean, just think about this. It really, it really does make me want to throw up. Do you know how many farts he's drilled into those cushions and how many things have probably been spilled on it, and their cats and their dogs' dingleberries and fur? Just, oh my God, it literally giving me just chills. And now he's going to use it to dry off his balls. Like it was under and over and through his hairy ball woods. And then he doesn't even tell Allie why the cushion was wet and says, oh, the dog must have peed on it. Well, okay, day two, and don't worry, I'm not going to outline each day because this is where the show started to fail me. And it's because they breeze over about 80% of the days and we have no idea what they retrieved or anything. But on day two, Allie picks her $1,500 Givenchy heeled boots. Really? I think she just wanted us to know she had $1,500 Givenchy boots. And Justin picks pants. Since Allie's having such a hard time on day two, her friend picks her up for a spray tan and tacos while her husband is at home eating MREs like he's on a battlefield in Nam. She doesn't even bring him back a damn taco. That would be grounds for divorce where I come from. So day three, Allie picks her phone because she says that she needs it for work. Justin picks a shirt. Day four, she picks toothpaste. He picks a truck so he can go to work, even though he doesn't even have shoes at this point. Day five, they pick a soap and towel. And we find out that Justin now just loves freeballing, so he's not going to be picking underwear, and he's probably not going to wear them for the rest of his life. Blech. Day six, she picks a razor. He picks shoes. Day seven, he picks shorts. She picks shampoo. Day eight, she picks a dress because she has a work event where she has to walk a red carpet, and he picks a shirt. Do you see how boring it's getting here? This is what I mean. Maybe if it was a different couple or a group of people that were interesting, but I feel like these two, they're just unrelatable. It's just, I don't know. Don't worry, I'm almost done. So just as bored as we are, Justin decides that he's going to read his car manual while Allie is wearing a tight blue dress to her red carpet, and she looks like crap because she has no makeup and her hair is just this long, straggly, greasy mess. Now, wouldn't a fashion stylist know? Just pull your long, stringy hair back into a low, sleek ponytail. Take some of that dog shampoo made from coconut oil that she had talked about. Put it on your lips, add a little shine, then get some charcoal from your fire pit and make a smoky eye. Just look around. I don't know. Look at me. Maybe I should recreate this look on my YouTube. I'll become a tween sensation. And then I'll come out with my own slime line. Okay. On day nine, we learn that Allie uses their one towel on the wet dog. Fucking gross. Day 12, she picks yet another bandage dress. And now Bravo just fast forwards days at a time. So there's no concept of what they got each day, why they got it, where are they going? Are they going to work wearing this? Or are they just like the couples on House Hunters who collect shells and dream to be extras in the background on a Hallmark Christmas movie and they're just living in LA? Day 16, he gets his TV back, and now all of a sudden we're on day 20 and he picks a robe. Like, what the fuck? So now it's day 21 and they get all their stuff back and find they don't need all this stuff. She's gonna even let him throw out stale, moldy Christmas cookies that they found in a tin. Those people are fucking gross slobs. That's disgusting. And in the end, Allie donates 1,000 items of clothing. Who fucking cares? Now, we're 6 months later. We check in with them. Meet back up, and we found out Justin has renovated the bathroom. Go tell the Property Brothers because I don't give a fuck. And Allie is pregnant. Predictable. Megan King Edmonds did it first. And again, for a stylist, she could not have picked a worse bandage dress again to be wearing over that pregnant belly. So here's my verdict. This show will get one more shot from me. I think it has a lot of potential, but it was just executed horribly. No one is interested in making a personal connection with these people. We don't care about their dreams and their wishes. We just want to see the funny shit that happens. I have a feeling the original show that was created in Denmark did it better. Again, it's like the attempts that American shows do, knocking off the Great British Baking Show. There's only one show that I can think of off the top of my head that met and maybe even exceeded the original, and that, of course, is The Office. So, Bravo, make it nice, and maybe we'll stick around. Thanks for tuning in today. Tomorrow, I will be back with a little rundown of the documentary Voyeur, which debuted on Netflix on December 1st. lots of controversy and mixed opinions on this one. And on Friday of this week, I will drop in with Unexpected on TLC and the new season of Top Chef on Bravo tomorrow night. So excited. Please rate and leave a review on iTunes. And thank you to so many of you who have left the most kind things to say. I'm a real salty broad most of the time, but I'm really soft and sweet on the inside, and I get a lump in my throat reading those every single time. If you're interested in some more talk about family drama, creepy documentaries, and psychic stuff, head over onto patreon.com/welcometorealityTV, and you can find all those social media links in the show notes in your podcast description or on welcometorealityTV.com. You're halfway through the week. Hang in there. Stay sweet, stay salty.